You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.
This doesn't surprise me.
I think that sends the right message on so many different levels.
What a crock, eh?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
All right, welcome to it. I'm Jay Michaels. Ryan Doyle is off this week. Chris Chapin is co-hosting today, joining us in studio, digital strategist and political commentator Jennifer Holliday. Jen.
Hello.
Principal at Navigator Amanda Galbraith. Hello.
Hello.
By the way, this dog you're fostering.
Yes, dude.
Dude. It's so cute. On your Instagram, you and him running was very cool. And was that your niece?
Those were my poor niece running. Yeah, no, it's actually my friend's niece or my friend's daughter. Sorry, my friend's daughter, Claire. Yeah. He's with Fetch and Release. So if you want to adopt a really amazing dog that you like running with every morning, that's Dude is his name. So.
Fetch and Release.
Fetch and Release, they call it.
Or Release,
my Instagram is Fosters for Finn, and that's how you can find him.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Also joining us from the National Post, it is Christy Blatchford, another animal lover. Hey, Christy.
Hey, and yes, I am an animal lover. I can't see how you can foster a dog, though, because I would fall in love with the dog, and then I would want to adopt the dog.
That's the danger, isn't it?
It's been an interesting relationship challenge, but we are working our way through it together.
That's good.
All right, this is a story breaking this afternoon. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association challenging the Ford government's mandatory anti-carbon tax gas stickers in court, saying these stickers are a compelled political message. Christy, are they right?
Yeah, I think they probably are, though I confess I am amused about the concern for compelled speech when I saw very little evidence of that when the Law Society of Ontario attempted to impose compelled speech really upon its members. And when they had their bencher election, the against side, against compelled speech, won. But I don't recall, I may be wrong, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association going to bat for them.
Interesting. Now, Amanda, as of a week this Friday, gas stations will be forced to display the article from Robert Benzie today, Tory blue decals on every pump, warning the federal carbon tax will cost you. Is this, and I asked Chris this question earlier, you know, as a strategist, is this perfect messaging? Is this where you want it to be? Is it politically motivated?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I think it's a smart way to inform consumers and voters about what the implications of the tax is. Do I say it's politically motivated? Yeah, for sure. But it's also politically motivated on either side. I mean, the head of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association is the former AG for the Liberals. So, like, Liberal Party Ontario. So, like, they're all playing a little bit around this.
I'm being a bit cute.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not super wild about a government compelling someone to put a sticker on their thing or penalize them by $10,000. I don't think anyone really would be, but I also think it's important to inform voters about the implications of this stuff. And in particular, I think it's going to be very interesting leading into the federal election.
Now, Jen, this is not affecting you unless they chase you down on your bike and slap one on.
Yeah, I did.
Because you're not at the pumps a lot.
I did bike over, and I was thinking about that. I'm not at pumps, and there are a lot of people who don't receive that messaging. But for me, I'm very interested in two things. Seeing some of the pushback from people who might identify as conservative on social media when it comes to telling businesses like what to do and fining them. But also the growing list of legal actions and court cases against the Ontario Conservative government. Because there's a long list. I had to research it because there have been so many. There's the Tesla case with the rebate, which they won. There are many challenges around sex ed. There's the cancellation of cap and trade, basic income, college task force. I'm part of the Bill 5 challenge, the interference in last year's Toronto municipal election. So this list continues to grow.
Yeah, but do you think that, how much of that has to do with just these groups that just don't like the premier? Because there's no question, the premier is polarizing. He's a polarizing figure, and it's interesting. I don't recall any of the same kind of lawsuits being filed against even Stephen Harper when he was prime minister. I wonder how much of this is just people using the courts as a new means of political, you know, we call it lawfare, using the courts because that's just a way to get at the premier and score some points.
And his actions. I don't think it's just about Doug Ford, the personality, although that comes with his style of campaigning and politicking. Mm-hmm. I agree you can't separate it. But ultimately, these legal challenges and lawsuits are after and challenging specific ministries.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about sticking with messaging. Unifor going to be running an aggressive anti-conservative campaign. Even though its partisanship concerns some members who are journalists and media workers, in an email to Unifor members, Jerry Diaz wrote the union saying they will run television ads during the election writ period, asking Canadians to think twice about supporting the sheer agenda and this union representing 12,000 journalists and media workers.
Not me, I'm proud to say.
Here in Canada. And I will start with you, Christy, despite the fact they don't represent you. Is it a bit worrisome that a union leader that does represent 12,000 journalists is essentially picking a side in an election?
Yes, of course it is. And, you know, he said in his note to his email to members, I hear you. Well, I'm not going to do anything about it. That's what that means. I hear you, but I don't really care. I am very uncomfortable with this. I'm uncomfortable that the same union has a seat on the committee, which is going to be handing out, money to newspapers under the federal government's, you know, save the newspaper stuff. I don't believe in handouts. I think there's an easy way to level the playing field and help newspapers, and that is to stop subsidizing the CBC digital operation, which is a direct competition to all of us in the newspaper business, and take the government subsidy away from the CBC, not from CBC Radio. I know it's beloved, you know, yuck. And not CBC TV, but CBC Digital, which is where much of their funding now goes. The government subsidizes CBC Digital to compete against newspapers like the Star and the National Post, and they shouldn't.
Yeah, it certainly feels like an unlevel playing field.
Yeah, I find this, like Christy's, I agree with Christy on everything, which I know will shock all of the listeners.
and I with so, you.
Yeah, I find it deeply troubling. I think it's unfortunate because, you know, I think our Canadian journalists and friends with lots of them are really great, smart, hardworking people. And this does them no favors as far as that credibility battle that they're facing every day, right? And this is what happens when you align with unions who are activists like this. And it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate that they're on the bailout committee either. I do think we have an issue with news media, and I think Christy presents a very interesting solution frankly haven't heard of before, but I think it sounds smart. But bottom line, yeah, this is really problematic. And if you wonder why conservatives have a huge suspicion of the media and the CBC and those organizations, this is why.
Jennifer?
Unions have always been political, and union members have always voted for different parties, despite if a union endorses a party, or in this case, doesn't endorse one party. What's interesting?
They're not endorsing, though. Yeah. They're like explicitly campaigning against
the one.
Yeah,
which but they're not endorsing one of the other parties.
But I think that's splitting hairs.
I guess it depends which political party you're in. But I want to highlight what's interesting about Unifor is how sector diverse they are as a union. So they were an amalgamation and merger between CEP and CAW, what leaves them with communications, media, transportation, resources, manufacturing, and service employees, mm-hmm. right? So for...
It's not that interesting.
Oh, I think it is, because all of those groups have different interests, and the concerns by journalists might not be the concerns of some of those other industries.
Yeah, he hears us.
But the concern there, I think, always goes back to the rights of every individual union member. In this case, the 12,000 media members can't pack up and leave Unifor. They're bound by their collective agreement. So it certainly presents the point where you literally have 12,000 union members that are being forced, their paychecks getting docked, their dues, to support a message that they have been very vocally against. So I don't know how you square that circle. I mean, at this point, I think it's safe to say union leadership has become pretty much the same as political party leadership.
Certainly on a visibility scale.
Right. And then when the president, when Jerry Diaz speaks up, we all listen and we talk about it on radio. So and in your case, I agree with Amanda. It does hurt Andrew Scheer. It hurts the conservatives. And if it's not helping him, it's hurting him. So it's going to help. In this case, we know who it's aimed to help. It's aimed to help the Trudeau Liberals. And I think there's a problem there if you've got a huge swath of your union membership saying, hey, we don't want to support this, and you do it anyway.
A couple of stories we want to fit in before we break at 6 o'clock for Dave Bradley's views on the news. We're learning today that cash-strapped Canadians are treating their homes like ATMs to pay off their bills. In a news release, the largest insolvency firm in Canada saying that 3 in 10 Canadian homeowners with a home equity line of credit say they have used the funds borrowed to pay down other debts. More than a third say they've used that money to do things they otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. Also, about 1 in 7 say they then regret the amount they've borrowed against their home and are concerned about paying off those home equity loans. And Christy, it can't help but feel like a bit of a ticking time bomb for people that get sucked into that debt hole, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, of course. It's a dangerous situation. And, if they're if there's a problem in the economy, which comes, if interest rates go up, some of these people won't be able to pay all their lines of credit and their mortgages. And I know lots of people who have done this. It's a mistake.
And do you wonder too, Jennifer, if it isn't one of those situations for so many people that it is so easy to incur debt, it is so easy to rack up multiple credit cards, that we're sort of the victims of our own, you know, just the availability of funds?
Well, and the banks and the lenders play a big part in this. I know I'm constantly saying no thank you, because the offers are coming in quite aggressively.
Oh, you don't want to up your limit?
Right. Or like, hey, you could take out some money or take out a line of credit to do this. So you do have to have great restraint and focus to be able to say no, because I think there are trends that we're seeing, and people are hoping for the best when it comes to their investment on their home.
And we talked about this today when it comes to, you know, Canadians in the way in which we invest. And I think Chris, you know, sort of nailed it on the head. It's that it comes down to, for a lot of people and for a lot of us, you know, educating ourselves when it comes to what our abilities are, when it comes to our own money and what we can afford and what we can't afford. We have to really be smart with our money. And for a lot of people, it's really easy to get sucked into that, you know, that new home that you just have to have.
Oh, for sure. I think it's even just get sucked into that new home, the new couch, the new pair of shoes
the
for
trip.
Me. The trip. Yeah. Oh, I'll just put on my card and deal with it later. I mean, I've literally done the cycle where I paid it all off, and then I'm like, oh, I'm really good and responsible. So I'm like, oh, I'll get that line of credit just in case. And I'll take that credit card increase just in case I need it. And then all of a sudden it's right back up again. I've just paid it all off again. I'm now being very disciplined about it. But I think truly educating young people about this, and also understanding just like the debt level that young people are under right now. Like, yeah, of course they're using their houses as their, like, as their bank accounts, because it's the only thing they have of value if they've managed to get into the market. So I think we have a huge challenge, and we should educate people a little more about it. And I hope we see, like, either that's in high school or through other programs that we can avail ourselves to.
Now, I think it's fair that we started off talking about dogs. We should finish talking about dogs. A bizarre, do you like dogs? A very bizarre story out of cottage country today, where an Ontario family whose dog went missing found a note in their driveway that accused them of neglect, saying, "I have your dog. Stop looking for it." The woman reporting this on Facebook is Jordan Legate, and she's actually a veterinary technician. And she said that she was worried after she noticed that her brother-in-law's golden retriever had gone missing from their cottage. Now, Christy, the people that took this dog essentially saying, "You don't deserve to have a dog, you're mistreating this dog." So it's basically a case of thief or rescuer.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story a couple of years ago. This was a homeless man I know, and he took better care of his dog than he ever would have dreamed of taking care of himself. And an animal rights group stole his dog and said he shouldn't have a dog because he was homeless. Those are not the judgments you get to make about somebody else. If you think a dog is in dire need, then you save him and call the appropriate authorities. You don't steal the dog and then attempt to lecture the people who had the dog. It's wrong.
Yeah, it's almost, Amanda, it's like a ransom note not demanding a ransom.
Oh, it was crazy, too. The note itself was, like, all typed out, and then the bottom they'd scrawled, like, a hand. Like, what is the point to typing it? But I was actually thinking, because of, like, the dog that I'm rescuing, rescuing.
Okay.
But when we got him, right, he'd been in a shelter for 6 months laying on concrete. He had not a lot of fur on his stomach. He had a lot of dandruff. There's a lot of things that look like he was neglected, and he wasn't. Like, now he's a week, we're feeding him like organic coconut oil and he's all good. But if you just looked at him, you would think, what has this woman done to this dog? So be careful about judgments. You don't know what they're going through.
And talk to your neighbors. Ask some questions.
Oh,
there might be more to the story.
Yeah,
that's today's public service announcement.
Yeah.
The same people inside the story said, "We knew we were in trouble though, when we moved into the cottage and the people didn't like us wakeboarding." That's always a wolf whistle right there.
That's a big, aggressive sport to take.
That really is. Christy Blatchford, Amanda Galbraith, Jennifer Hollett, thank you all so much. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, too. Bye.